Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
My prayer was just, don't let this be wasted pain. Don't let this be for nothing. Do something significant with it in my life and through my life.
I'm Jim Burns. After the birth of her daughter, will Nancy Guthrie look forward to all the memories that they would make together? But the diagnosis of a rare metabolic disorder meant that Nancy's daughter would only enjoy a short life on Earth. Nancy and her husband, David, named their daughter Hope. And in the years since her passing, they have learned many lessons from their daughter about the hope that God makes available to each one of us here today, the promise of a better life with Him one day in eternity. Nancy Guthrie joins me here in studio today to talk about the purpose of grief and the promise of hope found in Jesus Christ. Holding out for a better life is our theme today on a very special edition of Homeward.
From the studios of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, graduating difference maker since 1899, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. Are you going through a season right now where you've experienced a tragedy involving one of your children? If that is your story, so glad you've tuned in today because of a special broadcast that we're kicking off today, a two-part conversation featuring Dr. Jim Burns and best-selling author Nancy Guthrie. Nancy and her husband went through a very, very challenging season of life where not one but two of their children were born with very serious physical challenges, and she's got a fantastic story about it. Our theme today, holding out for a better life. You will be encouraged by what you're about to hear. Now let's get into part one of Dr. Jim Burns' conversation with Nancy Guthrie here on Homeward.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today we have a very special guest. Her name is Nancy Guthrie with us. We're talking about holding out for a better life. She's written a great book called Hoping for Something Better. You know, most of us have grown accustomed to disappointment in our lives. We all have disappointment. If you don't today, then you're going to maybe have it tomorrow, or you just went through a season. But life in Christ holds the promise of something better, and we should be looking for that every day. And there is something better, and we're going to talk about that. So if you're going through a tough time today, boy, don't go away. It's going to be a great program. Nancy is the author of a book called Holding On to Hope. She is married to David. The Guthries serve together as co-hosts of a new video series from Grief Share. It's an organization designed to help those who have suffered a loss find hope in the midst of their suffering, and they've actually suffered a loss that we're going to talk about. The Guthries live in Nashville with their son, Matthew. Nancy, welcome to our program.
Thanks so much for having me, Jim.
I have heard so much about you from kind of mutual friends, but I actually read about you in Time Magazine a number of years ago. You say that a lingering sense of disappointment is actually quite common among Christians, and it seems to me that most of the people I meet right now have a lot of just kind of disappointment in their life. Disappointment maybe with their marriage, disappointment with their kids, disappointment with their faith.
There's so much that doesn't live up to our expectations, isn't there?
There really is.
Around us, we thought we'd get married and that would be, that'd just be everything. And maybe that's been a little disappointing, or that parenting, when we finally had a child, then I'll be really.
How many people I know just have disappointment? Disappointment for their families, disappointment for their marriages, disappointment at maybe work, disappointment in their faith.
I think disappointment is a significant part of life. We think, I thought my life would be different than this. I thought I would be different than this, that I would accomplish more or whatever. And I think even those of us of faith have that sense in which, I thought I'd be farther down the road with God than this. I'm disappointed in myself, too. Yeah.
And so what you say is we just have to learn to live with disappointment. Some of us get so upset with ourselves because it isn't, but it's a fallen world. Mm-hmm. It's a broken world.
It is. We have this expectation that I should be satisfied. Maybe that's especially part of being an American,
right.
But living in this broken world, disappointment is a huge part of that.
Right, it really is. And you know your own life has been filled with lots of disappointment. An appeal for endurance is what Hebrews talks about. You found that the book of Hebrews for you to be a real call to what you call an appeal for endurance in spite of difficulty, perseverance in the face of disappointment. And you've experienced that. I mentioned as I was introducing you that I'd read about you first in Time Magazine, because you had a pretty incredible experience actually not that long ago. Tell us about your daughter Hope and your son Gabriel and the journey that you and David had in terms of walking through their situation.
Well, I was so looking forward to having a daughter. I had a son who was 8 at the time, Matt, and I went to the hospital looking forward to having this healthy daughter to raise and enjoy to be my friend when I was old. And immediately we noticed with Hope what we would call numerous small problems. That's what the pediatrician said. But he said a lot of times small problems add up to something bigger. And on her second day of life, a geneticist came into our hospital room and he told us that he suspected Hope had a rare metabolic disorder called Zellweger syndrome. We'd never heard of that. It's the same word as Renee Zellweger. That's the only place we'd ever heard of it. And he told us that she was missing this tiny subcellular particle that you and I have in every cell that helps us process long-chain fatty acids. And that because she wasn't missing that, because she was missing the peroxisomes, that those long-chain fatty acids would build up in her systems and become toxic, and that slowly all of her systems would shut down. And he told us that there was no treatment and no cure, and that most children with that syndrome live less than 6 months.
You heard this right within...
On her second day.
Second day.
And that was the biggest blow of disappointment in my life. He was right on cue. Hope was with us for 199 days, just a few couple of weeks over 6 months. And there we were, back to a family of three. And, you know, I think, Jim, that for a while I grieved her death. I think then for a while I grieved her life and how limited it had been because she had had a short and difficult life because she couldn't see or hear or respond and she had seizures and that was all very difficult. And then I began to grieve our loss of potential because the genetic reality was that once we had a child with Zellweger syndrome, we knew that my husband and I were carriers of that recessive gene trait, and that whenever we had a child, that child would have a 25% chance of having the fatal syndrome. And as we thought, well, would that be the worst thing in the world for us to go through that again? Honestly, we thought it wouldn't be. We loved those 199 days we had
right,
with Hope.
Wow.
But we don't live in a vacuum. And we felt like it wasn't wise to risk putting our son, Matt, through that again, nor our parents. Because while it was devastatingly painful for us, I think it was even multiplied for our parents to watch their child lose a child. Mm. And so we took surgical steps to prevent a future pregnancy. And it was about a year and a half after Hope died. In fact, I had just passed what would have been her 2-year birthday. And I remember at that point, I didn't think that that would be a big deal, that I was past my big grief. And all of a sudden, I felt so disappointed not to have a 2-year-old little girl next to me in the car in a car seat. And my grief was enormous. And a couple of weeks later, I realized that I was very late starting my period and that I was pregnant. And we decided we were going to need to know that we had a 75% chance of having a healthy child and a 25% chance of having a child with the syndrome. And we went through a series of prenatal tests before we told hardly anyone that we were pregnant and discovered that the child I was carrying would once again have Zellweger syndrome. And it was in July of 2001 our son Gabriel was born, who also had a short and difficult life and was with us about 6 months, too.
You know, when you found out, what were you thinking? What were you feeling? I mean, what happened? What did
when
you
I found out about Hope or about Gabriel?
About Gabriel, you know, the second time.
To be really honest with you, Jim, I thought, okay, God, if you are asking me to do this again, you must have something really significant you want to do with it.
Wow.
And if you do, then do it.
Yeah.
My prayer was just don't let this be wasted pain. Don't let this be for nothing. Do something significant with it in my life and through my life. But I had such a solid sense of the sovereignty of God at work in my life. I knew it wasn't an accident. And so I just wanted him to use it in a significant way.
It's incredibly inspirational, and yet it had to be so hard. And yet in the midst of it, you did find some hope. I mean, obviously it was hard. I mean, and reality is hard and life is difficult. We've been talking about that. But you found hope. I mean, how did you find this hope?
Well, I think one thing is that when people look at my experience, and as you look in it, as I discuss it with you, all you can see is the pain. And see, I had going into accepting Gabriel coming, I had the full knowledge of the pain that I experienced in loving and losing hope. But I also had a firsthand knowledge of the joy that she brought into my life.
Right.
And the meaning and the significance and the richness. And so as we looked forward to saying yes to Gabriel coming, we not only anticipated the pain, we anticipated the joy, and we didn't want to miss it. And so I think that's a big part of the hope. And I would go back to just that confidence that I had, that while it was on the face of it such a bitter, dark, hard experience, that God was working that invisible hand behind the scenes. And I firmly believed in Romans 8:28 that he would use it for something good. I mean, I know that a lot of people who go through suffering kind of resent that verse of Romans 8:28, that, you know, all those who are God's children, that God is going to use everything in their life for good. And they're kind of, but you know, the verse doesn't say that everything is good, but he says he will use it for good.
That's a great comment. Listen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to keep talking about this, and I want to help us understand how we can be hoping for something better, even when, you know, tragedy hits, and it does with everybody, and these great disappointments as we've been talking about. What a privilege today to have Nancy Guthrie with us.
And one of the things you realize as you hear Nancy's story is that not always the bad situation turns out for the good the way we want it to, but God can use it for good, as Nancy just mentioned. Today here on the Homeward Broadcast, we're talking about holding out for a better life, and Nancy has written a book about her journey. Actually, she's done a lot of Bible studies, too. She's got quite a wealth of material. You go to homeward.com and hit the radio broadcast section. We have Nancy's name hotkeyed there today. And if you click on that, you'll go right to her website. You can learn more about her ministry and the ministry that God has given her and her husband in these days since the passing of her young children through these very extraordinary circumstances. Homeward is able to bring you this broadcast and others like it because of your prayers and faithful financial support. Can't do this without you, and we really appreciate it when you do support us. You can give a gift online through our secure website at homeward.com. That's HOMEWORD.com.
I'm Jim Burns with today's Homeward Snapshot.
Mr. Davis, Tina's a bright girl.
I'm aware of that, Dr. Thompson.
And she's making tremendous progress.
Well, I don't think I agree with you there. I mean, she's been at this for some time now, and it doesn't seem to me like she's getting any better.
Well, she's only been in therapy for a month.
Only a month? So how come she still seems so skinny and pale?
It's going to take time. A lot of time.
I want her to get well now. Don't you understand? I don't ever want my daughter to go through something like this again.
In a society that demands instant gratification, the healing process can be unbearably slow. A skilled counselor can oftentimes bring family problems out for open discussion, but remember, it can't replace friendships, the family, or even the church. If your family has recently been confronted with a crisis, you're probably in need of a little healing right now. You can learn how to go about getting that when you read my tip sheet called Restoring Broken Family Relationships. You can download a free copy directly from our website at homeward.com. I'm Jim Burns. Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. Nancy Guthrie with us today. We're talking about holding out for a better life. Her book is called Hoping for Something Better. Noted speaker and author, married to David. The Guthries live in Nashville area with their son, Matt. And you've just been hearing the story. I'm sure that if you were even driving, you've probably pulled over to see more about what goes on, the continuing story. You were talking about this, and I saw pain in your eyes, and I also saw joy. It's a mixed feeling, and in some ways, that's how life goes. I mean, I had chills as you're saying this, because I haven't had that experience happen to me. And yet, I almost feel bad, because I still feel that I want something better in life, and there are disappointments in my life, but I haven't experienced what you've experienced. And yet, in many ways, the Chinese have something where they have a symbol about crisis, and they always say, crisis is self-defined. And it seems to me that what you're talking about is, we've got to figure out how to find hope in the midst of whatever were being taken through. And you found hope in your faith. And I want you to talk about how you found hope in actually thinking about some of the eternal issues.
Well, I think about you using that Chinese quote. You know, we're the only generation, and I really think the only people on the earth today, that when suffering comes into our life, our first instinct is to pray it away. Because it is.
Yeah.
You know, our first instinct is, first of all, I don't deserve this. God must be not be on the job.
Yeah.
And all we know how to do in the American church today, pretty much when someone suffers, is to ask God to take it away. You know, Chinese Christians don't pray that way. They pray not for God to take away their suffering, but that God would give them the strength to endure it. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole big paradigm shift, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, but I think that that is where the hope is in suffering, and where the confidence is, that if God's allowed something hurtful into our lives, the confidence he's going to use this for good. He's going to do something good in my life. And so I have so much confidence in God, and I so want to know God in a deep, personal, meaningful way. I don't want to pray it away. I want to say, Lord, be in this. Help me to know you through this like I couldn't have known you without it. You know, in Isaiah describes Jesus as a man of sorrows acquainted with grief.
You're right.
And in Matthew, we see this picture of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he says to the disciples that he is agonizing to the point of death. He has such a heavy heart as he faces the cross. Mm. And we talk about how we want to know Jesus, you know, and we want to know victorious Jesus. But if we really want to know, if I want to know you, Jim, I want to know the full facet of your personality and who you are. And if we want to know Jesus, then it's sorrow in our lives that helps us to know him.
Sure.
In that way. Like we couldn't have known him before that sorrow.
Right. I think sometimes in our brokenness and in our sorrow, we actually draw closer to him.
Well, we're so desperate.
Right.
You know, those hard thing places in life, they send us to our knees. And first we're asking for God to take it away, to be rescued from it. And then as we continue to pray and pour our hearts out to him, rather than asking for it to be removed or to be rescued, we ask for it to be redeemed.
Yeah. You said sometimes broken hearts become hard hearts. What did you mean by that?
Well, in Hebrews 3, the writer of Hebrews is talking about the children of Israel in the desert and how many of them, that the promise of rest was open to them, but they weren't able to enter it because their hearts were hard. And I just look at that and I say, what causes hard hearts? And I know from my own life and from looking around at other people that a lot of times when our hearts are broken, kind of like when a vase breaks and you put glue on it and then it becomes so stiff and hard you could never break it again, our hearts are a little bit like that. And they become hard because we become resentful toward God.
Interesting.
And we're not open to him anymore. And so they become hard toward him.
And you gave a great illustration about the Lord's approachability. You actually talked about kind of a backstage pass or a first class seat on a plane. But what you're saying is in the midst of all this, there is approachability. Because sometimes I think when people are hurting so much, they're not even sure how approachable God is because they're kind of blaming God sometimes for the whatever difficulty they're having.
This is how good Jesus is.
Yeah.
You know, we have this picture of God as this harsh judge. And he is a judge of sin. He will judge sin. But that's why Jesus matters. You know, a lot of people, they're kind of comfortable with God, but not Jesus. And Hebrews helps us understand why Jesus is significant, why he matters, because he's the one that provides us that backstage pass into the presence of God, because he is acceptable to God. And as we join ourselves to him, we can be accepted before God.
Mm, that's just a great illustration. And it reminds us once again that it's not about us, it is about him. And yet every time we're hurting or whatever, we kind of tend to look inside and feel those issues, and yet he seems so approachable. Now, when your daughter Hope was only a couple of weeks old, you had an experience at a church, I believe it was a Christmas program, that really enabled you to kind of start loosing yourself of the grip of fear, if that's right. Tell us about that story.
Well, when I think back to that night, you know, Hope was born the end of November, and a couple weeks into December, we went to the Christmas program at our church. And I remember being up in the balcony and holding Hope in my arms. And it just hit me at that time that there was, you know, the children's choir filed up to sing. And it just hit me, she will never sing in a children's choir.
Right.
And then I just began to think about all the things that I would never get to experience with her that I was looking forward to in life. That the richness of living in this world. And there are a lot of good things about living in this world. And as I sat there, you know, tears beginning to stream down my face and onto her, I also began to think about all the things she would miss out on, the painful parts of living in this world. And there's a lot of pain in living in this world. Our hearts do get broken. And we do face disappointment and hardship and the things we don't like about ourselves. And I just began to realize that as much as I wanted her to enjoy the good things in this world, that the good things that she was going to experience so soon, so much sooner than I will experience the good things on the other side of this life, in her eternal life, in the presence of God, that they wouldn't be just a minor improvement on the things here. That she wouldn't miss singing in the children's choir, and she wouldn't miss a beautiful meal here or a beautiful piece of artwork here. That she was pretty soon going to be in the presence of God where there would be no sense of disappointment. And everything would be full and perfected and beautiful and peaceful and restful. And so that began to change my thought patterns about it being a tragedy that she would have a short life. Because we look at someone, we think, oh, it's a tragic death when someone dies young, right? And I thought, is this going to be a tragedy that she will have the chance to escape the pain of this world very quickly and be in the presence of God where it will be full and wonderful? And I thought, you know what? It feels like a tragedy to me, but it's not.
And in some ways, it's a tragedy to you, but not to her.
Absolutely.
We say sometimes that we may not be able to change our circumstances, but we can change our attitude. And I think what changes our attitude is the eternal perspective.
Absolutely.
In a big way.
And, you know, Hebrews challenges that. If you remember in Hebrews 11, in the first verse of Hebrews 11, where it's talking about faith, it describes it as a confidence in what we haven't experienced and about seeing what's invisible. That's the essence of faith. Well, what's that talking about? It's talking about a spiritual reality beyond this world, and it's talking about the fulfillment of God's promises that we won't experience in fulfillment here. Some of his promises, we get a taste of the fulfillment here, a lot of them, but not the complete fulfillment.
Right.
That's out there. That's in this spiritual reality beyond this earth, this life that we can't see right now, and it requires faith to live like that's really true.
Mm.
And it makes sense that it would take something special because we haven't seen it with our eyes and we haven't touched it with our hands. We can't imagine heaven with our minds. We need faith as a gift from God so that we can live like we truly believe that that's a reality that we just haven't experienced yet.
Wow.
And I think that's what it required for us with Hope and with Gabriel. And the most distinct memory I have of that, Jim, is the night that Gabriel was dying and he was in our arms. And because we'd been through this before, we knew we were close. And in that moment, as I pulled out my Bible and read to Gabriel about the resurrection, David and I had to live out the reality of our faith in a way never before, for us to solidly believe that as he took his last breath here, that he would take his next breath in the presence of God. And that requires faith. And it's a gift of God.
And it's a gift of God, and it is all of our prayers. You have helped us so much. You got to come back so we can keep having this conversation. Nancy Guthrie, holding out for a better life, you can do it. And you've got to keep it in your mind that it's an eternal perspective. Life on this earth is short. Roger?
Well, there's nothing more challenging that we can think of than for a parent having to bury a child, and having just been part of a memorial service a couple weeks ago myself for a member of our church who had to go through that season. It is not fun, and yet God has a plan for all of our lives, and God can glorify himself through all of our situations. We're so grateful that Nancy has shared her story with us. We're just halfway through it. Part two will be on the next edition of the Homeward Broadcast. Of course, if you're podcasting with us, you already knew that. And we encourage you to check out our online audio stream at homeward.com. It's free to do that. You can go through the archives and listen to previous programs if you'd like. No cost involved there. And you can also podcast along with us. The Monday through Friday edition of the Homeward Broadcast is also available via iTunes. And as I mentioned, if you're podcasting with us, we loaded part one and part two up to the podcast on the same day. So there are some advantages to having that on-demand listening access. And of course, the podcast has no cost at all. All these free resources available, take advantage of them. Start that process at homeward.com.
Well, be sure to join me again next time when I'll continue my incredible conversation with Nancy Guthrie about what she has learned about faith and hope through the death of two of her children. Till then, I'm Jim Burns, and I appreciate you tuning in today to Homeward.
Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.